Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Mayor Pantaleone Boel. Boel is a composer, violinist, singer, and writer. She has written for fiddles, small ensembles, orchestras, film, theater, and roots rock bands. She also performs solo with her group Water Bear. Welcome to the show, Mayor. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Listen, I want to ask you, as I talk to so many musicians, were you also a musician who was brought up in a musical family?
Yes, I was.
Then tell us about it.
One of the memories I have, both my father and mother are musicians. My mother played classical piano, and my father was a music teacher at SUCO, State University College at Oneonta.
Hmm.
And one of the things we did growing up, which I just loved, was we sang madrigals around the dinner table. My father would teach us our parts. There are five of us kids, four girls and a boy. So the first two girls sang the soprano, second two girls sang the alto line. My mother sang tenor, my father sang bass.
My goodness.
And my brother, my younger brother, just sang whichever part he was closest to in his voice. So when his voice changed, he switched parts, you know.
Uh-huh. And what part did you play during that time?
I was the alto.
You were the alto. Uh-huh. So were you interested in music from day one, or this wasn't just pushed on you and you felt like you had to go with it, right?
No. I mean, it was always a big part of my joy in life, basically.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you have a degree in jazz vocal performance. Was that something that you were going to pursue more so than being a musician and composer?
I guess that's true. I was. I mean, I had done also a minor in violin. But when I studied classical violin, I got very burnt out on violin stuff. You know, the heavy-duty practicing, the technique. And I think someone wanted me to play romantic music, and I hated it, on violin.
Really?
So, yes, I was much more... If I had just played Bach all the time, I think I would have been happy.
So you liked happier music instead of the real heavy stuff?
I guess so.
Was that the transition that bothered
there
was, you?
There was something about that. You know, the sappy violin lines, I really did not like them. Tons of vibrato.
It's
and
like out-of-control sadness.
Right.
So jazz vocal performance, what was it? Was it classical jazz?
Yeah, the classics.
Jazz?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I did a senior recital in which Thelonious Monk, I sang some... pieces of his, like Lush Life was a piece.
Uh-huh.
So I did all the jazz standards, and in fact, I was thinking of having a career in New York City, but it was a tough place to live, I found. Uh-huh. I tried to be a jingle singer for commercials on TV. That was, you know, one possible way to earn a living.
Absolutely, and it still is for a lot of people, yeah.
But you know what I found out? Jingle singing is done by very, very few people. They just use the same people.
Really?
And overdub them.
Yeah, that's what's happened in voiceover as well, now that actors think it's a hip thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Famous
yeah.
actors. But let's talk a little bit, because I find this really interesting, the collaboration between you and your friend Ruth Rowland.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to creating Water Bear, you two got together and would sing Scandinavian music, I'm told.
Well, we were playing this music, but actually Finnish music, by this group called JPP that I was really in love with. And I had asked Ruth to play a bunch of this music with me, and we did some gigs playing the music. And I threw in a couple of my own fiddle tunes that I had written, and she really loved them. So eventually she said to me, you know, we should just play your stuff. Let's play your stuff.
Uh-huh.
She was really very, very encouraging.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what helped give me the courage to say, okay, well, let's do my stuff then.
I also read that you and Ruth had you were a duo called the Open Strings. And was that something that you two formed in order to perform in public, or was that just for the two of you to have fun with?
Yes, that was our group that we performed in public with. When
uh-huh.
we started doing a mixture of the Finnish tunes, my fiddle tunes, and that's when I first started writing the name music.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I don't remember where I got the idea for name music, except I had been thinking of trying to create some kind of unique music that would be personal.
Uh-huh.
And so I think I had the idea, you could do something with matching the letters in a name to pitches on the violin.
Uh-huh.
And then maybe create something using that melody as a starting point. Because a big thing when you're writing fiddle tunes is you're always trying to come up with some kind of a different melodic
mm-hmm.
hook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this would give me a way of doing that.
Yeah, what were you writing prior to the
Just
voila,
sort
of doing
straight ahead fiddle tunes.
Okay.
And then I wrote these pieces that I sang and played at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And I did a concert with those pieces also.
Wow. We will talk more about your name music. But let's listen to a piece from Water Bear. This is called Joan Nilsson. Let's talk about this piece. Mm. And tell us more about name music before we talk about Water Bear.
Well, the Joan Nilsson, that piece was written for Tim Reppert, our bass player, written for his parents upon the occasion of their, could it be 50th wedding anniversary?
That's what I heard, yeah.
And so what I did was take each of their names, and since Tim, their son, was our bass player, I gave them to the bass player to play as bass lines. So as you just heard in that piece, the bass line for Joan is J-O-A-N. Because you see, in my scheme, I basically just took the pitches. I started with the lowest pitch on the violin, which is a G, and so that becomes a G when I'm spelling out someone's name. So it goes G-A-B-C-D-E-F, and then I'd be back at G, another G, an octave of the next one. So I decided to not just repeat, but use the rest of the letters of the alphabet and fill in the accidentals.
Hmm.
So this became H, I is a B flat, and a J, K, and then L. And now I'm back again at that high G, the next octave of the G, so I made that an M and kept right on going. M, N, O, P, Q, R, S. Anyhow, you get the basic idea.
That is fascinating. Well, were you excited when you discovered that you could cover the whole alphabet?
Yes.
You must have been. That must have been one of those eureka moments.
Well, the other thing was figuring out, okay, can I actually write anything that makes sense? And so I started with very simple names at first. I started with Anne, because it turned out to be just those three notes, A-N-N. So I thought, well, I could do that. I could make a tune that started that way. And I tried Bob, which was also another octave thing.
Uh-huh.
I thought I could do that. Bill, I thought, okay, only three different letters, B-I-L-L, and that was... And that also lent itself to something. So I would start with this little snippet and then go on from there. Now, in the case of Joan Nilsson, since I was putting it in the bass line, it became more a question of, okay, how to write another line on top of that. And the interesting thing for me in the process of writing that tune was that it turned out that the first section was in 5/4, five beats to the measure, which I had to figure out myself because it just seemed to come to me that the bass line should be... It just seemed very natural, you know? And then when I was writing it down, I was like, wait a minute, it's got too many beats. It's got more than four. How many does I have? I think I have five. Yeah, okay, five. All right, well, there it is. And then I made Nilsson the bass line for the second section.
Hmm.
So that's, and then inventing the melody on top of that was just a case of playing this and then just sort of thinking... to kind of go to have something long starting it underneath and on top of this bass line. So
it's a gorgeous
tune. So that's
tune.
How that evolved.
It's very cheerful and touching in some ways. Yeah, I really
thank
like
you.
It. So tell us about how Water Bear evolved. You start writing music, you and Ruth. How did you expand?
Well, I had been actually taking composition lessons a little bit from Hank Roberts. And so the more and more he heard of my compositions, I was bringing them to him because it had been so many years since I was in school. When I started writing again, it was about in the year 2000. And so I was like, harmony, I can't remember my chords, I can't remember anything. So he helped me out looking at the structure of pieces, what you can do with them harmonically, what the language is. And the more I worked with him, I thought, oh, man, it would be lovely to have him play with us, too. So I asked him, and he then joined Ruth and I. So we had a trio for a little while. We started recording because my idea was that people would want this music to give as gifts to other people who had those names or to enjoy because they knew people whose names were that. So we were doing a bunch of recording, but we weren't actually playing out initially.
Huh.
I mean, I do love the recording process.
Do you?
I do.
Oh, well, most musicians don't. They find it tedious, I've heard.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Tim just makes it fun.
I've heard that as well.
So this is what happened. We were working in the studio, that Tim Ruppert's studio, and I saw this bass over in the corner. And I was like, Tim, I see a bass. Do you play bass? And he said, yes. So that's how he actually ended up joining our group. He had liked the music, and he would kept telling me that. Oh, I like this. This is great. This sounds great. And I was like, maybe this guy would like to play with us.
That is so fascinating. So it was just happenstance that all this came together. It wasn't deliberate.
No, not a huge plan. More like, you know, opportunities in the moment.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, a lot of things happen like that, don't
you
think?
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. They come together in that way. So tell us a little bit more about name music. I find it fascinating. Is there a history to it? And you know.
Well, various schemes have been used to write music for people based on their names. And I don't know a lot about it. There are, you know, there's a lot of information on the web about various schemes. One of the earliest ones was done using vowels. And I think this was about in the Middle Ages, where in order to write a tribute for a noble who was perhaps sponsoring you as a musician, one of the things you would do would be to write a piece based on his name, his or her name. So it would be, but they just used the vowels of the name. And I don't remember exactly how that scheme worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then there have been other schemes, like Bach himself wrote something based on his name, in which he made B-A-C, of course. Those are letters that also work as pitches. And then the H is a... H is a B natural, and the normal B is considered a B flat. Now, do I know why this is? No. I don't know why that is. So, but it's something that people have done through the ages using various schemes. I had never, I mean, the thing that really was different about my scheme was that it was very violin-centric, covered the entire alphabet in a scheme that just can be reused and reused and reused. Other people have invented different schemes for each occasion.
Let's listen to another piece from Water Bear. This one's called Ellen. Thank you. tell us about this piece.
Well, this piece is actually one of my older pieces, and I was very excited to record it with this grouping of people. I feel like I hadn't until this recording, perhaps, gotten a good version of this piece. It can be sometimes hard to actually record your intentions as a mm-hmm. composer to mm-hmm. get them actually to come out. And I don't know if that's a lack in the composer or what.
Well, I think you need to get the right ingredients with the people in
yeah.
jail, just like a director in a play, I
yes,
would assume.
It must be very much like that. Uh-huh. So I felt really lucky and blessed to get this version.
And who's on this?
Who are the
musicians?
Of course, I'm playing violin. Ben Blakeman is playing violin with us. And Bill Cowdery on piano. Chris White on cello. Nate Richardson on guitar. And Tim Ruppert on bass.
Mm-hmm. And is this a tribute to someone you know as well?
Ellen, yes. Uh-huh. A very dear friend.
Oh, that's great. Have you tried to tackle really, really long names like Anastasia or... I think you go from Bob
Fernando.
To...
No, right, yes. I haven't tackled very, very long names. We've done them in improvisation sessions.
Mm.
The longest one I did maybe was Gretchen Nathan Silas, a piece I wrote for our guitar player, Nate, to celebrate really his marriage to Gretchen, and Silas is their son.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a long
name. So that's probably the longest.
Huh, and that must be quite. How long does it take you to compose something like this?
It really depends on whether it's all kind of flowing and coming easily to me or not. I do tend to be able to do things quickly. It's sort of like if I can turn on the right channel or get onto the right channel, mm-hmm. Then it'll come quickly. So the basic development of a piece might take an hour or two, and then usually I like to let it sit for a minute, see if I need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the way I compose, is by feeling what isn't right. And then I have to search for the thing that will make it right. And I kind of feel it actually in my gut.
Uh-huh.
I feel this little unease if something's not quite right.
Uh-huh.
But I can't always come up with the thing that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
So that often, like I have some pieces that have never been completed because they're not quite right, but I have not been able to figure out what's not right with them yet.
Hmm. So you actually compose a piece and you write it down,
mm-hmm.
and do you present it to the musicians and then direct how they're going to play, or is it all written out for all the different...
No, there's a very, it's sort of, it's like a skeleton that's written out, and then we have to make something of it. I mean, in that sense, the way we play is done much more like a jazz group.
So it's a collaborative.
There's kind of a lead sheet, and that's what we're using as our instructions. But it's not, every part isn't written out. Although the longer we play a piece and the more development happens on it, the more and more I might write out, you know, the things we experimented with that we really liked, I might write them out just to capture them. And also if we have a different grouping of people, so that I can capture more of the piece and not have it all be up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also tried different ways of playing with the pieces. Some pieces, I mean, the original scheme I had for this was that it should just be an all-out improvisation, make some music out of these notes. So I didn't give any instructions. We tried not to have any prearrangement about how we were going to perform the piece.
And how did that work?
Well, at times it worked brilliantly, and at times we fell flat on our face. And so we would have to have little rules about what do you do when you fall flat on your face.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in dancing, there's this rule, a rule I've heard, which I loved, which is if, for example, the man, when he has spun the woman out and she falls, what is he supposed to do? He's supposed to fall also.
Really?
Well, it's only courteous, isn't it?
That's interesting.
You fall too, and then you both get up, and then it looks like, you know, okay, it wasn't just her fault or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So in music, we have these rules where, okay, if you start off playing something and then you realize, uh-oh, maybe this isn't good, our rule was continue doing it for at least 8 bars.
You're talking about when you're just improvising by yourselves or in front of an audience?
In front of an audience.
Oh, I see.
Because it can really sound awful. If you start off with an idea, drop it instantly, and then go to another idea, drop that, go to another idea, drop that. No. If you start with an idea, like, for example, what used to happen a lot with Ruth and I was we might each get the same brilliant idea at the same time.
Ooh.
And so very much sort of tuned in like ESP. And we'd be playing, and we'd look at each other and be like, oh, we're both doing exactly the same thing. Isn't that peculiar? And we might... Our tendency might be to both stop and do something else, right?
It would freak you out that you were so in tune.
Right, right. So instead, we would have this, try to practice this rule of, no, continue. Let it evolve from there. I mean, and this is a big jazz thing, too, that if you make a mistake, what you think of as being a mistake, one piece of advice, and I forget who said this first, was do it again.
You know? Well, chances are an audience isn't going to hear it unless you do abruptly stop or go, oops.
Well,
or,
exactly, exactly. So it's like learning not to go, oops, is the, you know, was the big thing with that method. So in this latest grouping where we had, you know, six people, in a way, I decided, well, let's try the other extreme. Let's try to ride out more, have really set arrangements so everyone knows what they're doing, and even have an order of the solos. Because when we were improvising before, we wouldn't necessarily choose an order either. Mm. It would all be up for grabs. So whether someone was soloing or not, you'd never know, and it would all just be, you know, it would all just be a flow. But in this latest grouping, we decided to do this more fully arranged version. And I'm still, you know, I like both ways. It was great to experiment with this way of doing it. And I found that I missed the other way. Hmm. And if we do too much probably of the free-for-all method, I would probably miss the strictly arranged method.
Because it seems like something could be missed. If it just becomes free flow, you know, stuff that you said, oh my God, I wanted to get a solo in.
Well, yes, and I wanted to hear a moment where the piano could play by himself, and I wanted to hear, right, and it would never happen. Uh-huh. But instead, what sometimes would happen is you'd get this other magic where something would happen that you had not planned.
Listen, let's play another piece. This one is called Dances One, O-N-E, and it is not, I am told, a name music piece. So let's listen to a bit of that. About it. It's not a name music piece.
I know. This is like heresy,
isn't it?
Is it new? Yes, it is. It actually started its life as a possibility to be used in The Soup Comes Last.
Oh.
I did some scoring for that, for the Kitchen Theater's production, when Rachel took it to New York City.
Mm.
And I needed to write some Chinese music. And so I was listening to Chinese music, and I wrote several versions of my own kind of Chinese melody. And this was one version that I wrote in a simplified version. What you just heard was more fully developed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Tim heard my version of this initially. He said, oh, no, I think this is for Water Bear. This is a piece for Water Bear. So that wasn't the one that was chosen for the score. So I developed that into something that we could play in Water Bear.
Mm-hmm. Do you give yourself parameters in regard to how long you want a piece to be? Or is it just a free-for-all? Remember in the 60s when the pop music was only like 2 minutes?
Yeah, you're only allowed to have it be that long.
And then the Beatles changed all that with their White Album, and they were doing 5, 6, 7-minute songs. Do you have a parameter?
Well, since there is improvisation, the way we might perform something live is going to be different depending on the players.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're going to put it on a CD, right, that's a consideration. Do you want, you know, how long do you want the pieces to be? You know, it's hard for me to tell. I mean, they usually end up being, it seems like we have some pieces that are 3 minutes, and then others are like 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when we would play with Hank early on, we could easily play a piece for 20 minutes.
Ooh.
Because he gets so into soloing that, you know, we could spend a really long time soloing, and that's okay. You know, his pieces tend to be much longer.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his sensibility.
I can see how this music could lead you into sort of a meditative state, especially when you're doing improvisation
yeah.
live, that you could go into one of those dreamy, you know, meditative states and keep going on and on and on until closing time. It's the kind of music it is. I love listening to it when I'm needing to think or, you know, be quiet.
Yes,
it's lovely stuff, really.
I really want to. Thank you very much for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really my overall intention, is to create a music that can transport people to maybe an inner landscape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And people certainly need to be encouraged to go there nowadays. Everybody seems to be so rushed and so tuned in to, where's my next email and who's calling me? Your music is greatly needed in this culture.
Thank you.
This point in time. So what? We've heard a couple pieces that you've been working on. I assume you're working on a full CD.
Yes. I hope that these three pieces that you've heard today will be on our next CD.
Mm-hmm.
Have no idea. I hope it will be out in 3 or 4 months. I have no idea what the CD is going to be called or anything about it yet, actually. I have the artwork vaguely in mind. My sister Alice has been doing watercolors for us.
Oh.
And so I have the watercolors ready to go on the cover.
That's great.
But, we have to work on that.
I also wanted to ask you this as well. Where did the name Water Bear come from?
You know, there actually is a little creature called a water bear. And it's a tardigrade, which is another name for it is a moss piglet. It's this tiny little microscopic creature that can live for a long time, like, I don't know, hundreds of years in a state of hibernation. And then if you water it, if you put it in water, it comes back to life and will move around and stuff.
How
and
bizarre.
Live again. Yes, it's very bizarre.
I wonder if it's ever run for office. Go to sleep for 100 years. Come back.
Oh, no. Heaven help us.
How interesting. So how did you find out about that and make that the name?
Well, it was, you know, there's another reason for it. My husband's name is Bear. And my name, Mer, is like La Mer, the sea in
right.
French,
uh-huh.
which is water. So water is very important to me. My husband's very important to me. He has always been a big fan and sponsor of the group.
Uh-huh.
So it made sense kind of to put those two things together.
That's great. Tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to buy the CD or just talk to you about music. Do you have a website?
The website would be a great way to contact me. It's www.waterbearmusic.com.
We have run out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Tish.
Our audio producer is Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And log on to our new website at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.